Welcome to The Apartment Guys, where we dive deep into all things multifamily investing. Our mission is to educate, inspire, and empower real estate investors to reach their highest potential. Each week, host Tate Seymour interviews high-level guests from all over the industry who are sure to bring valuable, actionable ideas that will propel your career to the next level. Whether you're just starting out or a seasoned investor, you are in the right place. And now your host, the apartment guy, Tate Seymour.
All right, we're rolling. Mr. Sterling White in the house.
Let's go, guys.
So stoked to have you on the apartment, guys. I know you bring truth nuggets and wisdom bombs and all the other great things that you bring. And ever since I started a podcast on apartments, you've been at the very top of my list. I'm so impressed with you and where you've come from, what you've been able to accomplish, and how generous you are in your sharing with others and your teaching. So it's really an honor to have you. I know that your time is very valuable, and you know, you're really a rock star in this world, and people that are in the apartment space all know who you are. And you know, you've done 200 articles plus on Bigger Pockets. So that right there makes you a celebrity. But just a few things on Sterling before we get started. Sterling is the co-founder and owner of Holdfolio. Let me just find your bio here. I had it. So
it is Sonder Investment Group.
I apologize.
Oh, no, you're good.
Please, you want to tell us a little bit about Sonder Investment Group?
Yeah, so the company Sonder Investment Group goes out and purchases existing multifamily holdings between 75 to 200 units while partnering with investors to where we were able to get them to, in essence, make money with their money. So those of you I also want to mention, go ahead, get your popcorn ready, get your notepad as well, because there's going to be absolute bombs and golden nuggets dropped. And give kudos to Tate as well. Love your energy that you bring to the podcast.
Thanks, Sterling. That's awesome. Yeah. So you really hit on the details. You know, you've done over 500 units, and you've been featured on, you know, Bigger Podcasts, Bigger Pockets podcast, Michael Blanc's podcast, Corey Peterson's podcast. You know, all the big guys have had you on, and you're just a content creator. And so, you know, people like me and who have been working on getting into the space, look to people like you as digital mentors, people that can help us along in our mindset, can help us believe what's possible, and also give us the tools to get there. So, you know, again, just thank you from the investor community for all that you've offered and done for all of us. So.
Yeah, it's one of those things that Tony Robbins, one of his quotes is, the secret to living is giving. So, and we'll unpack the story as well. But one thing that really helped for me was having mentors, and still to this day have mentors to really see their blueprints that they have and constantly ever evolving. Because one thing is, I'm not perfect by any means. I make a lot more mistakes than that I have successes. And I like to just experience, share on my trials and tribulations, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, starting with that, you know, I know your story a little bit, or maybe more than a little bit, because I've really been a fan, and I've watched every time that I've had a chance to see you. But if you would share with the listeners here, just kind of who Sterling White is from childhood on, and the long and winding road that got you to kind of where you are as a apartment building portfolio holder.
Gotcha. So I'll start from the beginning. I'll give you all like a spark note version, or I believe it's cliff note version. So born and raised Indianapolis, Indiana, single mother, fraternal twin brother. Dad wasn't around very much. Well, actually not at all. And the times I remember of him were not very, I would say, very negative experiences. And so grew up on government assistance. So there was a food stamp, Section 8, and I'm sure of any other assistance my mother then tell both my brother and I about. And the environment that we grew up in just wasn't the greatest. And there's one story I like to share with people is, my brother and I were actually sitting at, it was one of those like Fisher Price tables. I'm sure it was off brand name because we couldn't afford the actual brand names. and we're about five or six, and we're eating dinner. And as soon as we get done eating dinner in the kitchen area, we go upstairs and a bullet comes right through the back patio where we were sitting. So he may not be here, wow. But in essence, just ended up using that as fuel versus being a product of my environment. And then fast forward, to elementary days, that's where I got started in the whole entrepreneurship realm. First product was actually Kool-Aid. The second was Pokemon cards and just anything that I could get my hands on to sell in a legal sense to make money. And started in real estate 2009, construction side 2013, bought my very first single family house, no money out of pocket. Actually, at that time, I had negative funds because I overwithdrew just not being financially smart. Scaled up to 150 single families. 2017, bought first 46 unit apartment, and now today no longer own the single families and just own under 400 units. So that's like the compact version of my story.
Cool. So you've actually sold some of your single families and fairly recently, huh?
Yeah, actually, this was about the tail end of last year.
Okay. Gotcha. So you've simplified and you've pared down to just your apartment buildings, which, yeah, one of the things that we all love about apartment buildings is how nicely scaled up they are and how simplified they make owning many, many units. And, you know, we talk a lot about why multifamily on this podcast all the time, but having all of your units in one building with one loan and one set of investors and
one transaction. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It really it adds quite a bit of leverage, I guess, to really get that, to get your scale of your portfolio up, get your cash flow up. And then of course, when you do value add, this is going down a little bit of a tangent, but when you are able to add value to an apartment building and raise rents, even, you know, $50 to $100, something like that, even $25, you've created quite a bit of value in the building as well, which is super exciting. So, and by the way, Sterling, I don't know that I've shared with you. I'm actually from Cincinnati originally. A lot of time, in Indianapolis. Yeah, all the hills. I've spent a lot of time in Indianapolis. Never went to the 500, but I've been there many, many times. And I know that area of the world really well. We've actually spent, I know that you've looked in Columbus, Ohio some. And
not Cleveland, and Cincinnati. Love Cincinnati. I would actually move there.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, it's a cool city. It's really, especially in the last 5 years, really blown up, and the multifamily world is reflective of that. We really like Columbus, especially because it seems to be kind of a needle in a haystack market that's growing really quickly and is really nicely really diversified.
I believe it's the second largest, because it was Indianapolis right behind Chicago. And I believe it just exceeded that, but it in terms of the growth.
Yeah. Yeah. So we love that. Cat's out of the bag a little bit on Columbus, but we're still looking there. in your story, you know, you touched on one thing that really struck me. And that was, first of all, I'd never heard that story about the bullet coming through your window. And it's hard for me to imagine that. And growing up in a place like that, or in a situation, a surroundings like that. But you said you used it to, I forget the exact words you said, but something to the effect of that you used it to propel you forward, and mm-hmm. you used it as motivation to not be a victim of your circumstances, which is exactly. So impressive to me. Yeah.
And the thing was, is my fraternal twin brother ended up taking that path, and we just converged. I mean, it's very interesting how people say that, I believe it's Zig Ziglar, that the surrounding people that you have are a composite of you. And I feel that's exactly how it was, because my mother and I actually moved us from that environment. We were still in lower income housing, but we moved out to more of the suburbs. And my brother ended up going back to that where we formerly were, and those groups of friends. And he ended up taking a different path, the product of the environment. We still talk, but in essence is, just want to share that in terms of really who you surround yourself with really is very important.
Yeah. And you know, what your story also illustrates, the power of choice. That, you know, you had a number of different options as to which direction to go. And you're literally your twin brother took one road, you took another. And, you know, to me, the definition of an entrepreneur is somebody that can solve problems at high levels, you know, and you've been solving problems at high levels since you were a kid.
Yeah, exactly.
So congratulations on that. And on, you know, on choosing when you, because I would think that you would have had to choose your path at a pretty young age, because you can get messed up in bad stuff way young. So I would think that you kind of knew who you were, knew what you were about, knew what you wanted to be probably pretty young. Is that right?
I knew the direction I wanted to go. And I also had this very pivotal moment. And you may know this story, Tate, is I was out at this in my college years, early 20s. This was right when I was in the construction. So long story short is I'm on this boat at a college party having a good time. I shifted away from the crowd. So I'm out on this boat in the middle of this lake. Beaming question comes down to me and asks me, Sterling, is this what you want to do with your life? And when that question came down to me, I don't know what it was, higher being, God, whatever someone would want to call it. But I answered back, no, this is not. And that's when I really took a different trajectory in life, because since at that point, I was just drifting into average land. And since that moment is that I had cut off all my friends because they weren't going where I wanted to go. Great people. And second was I cut out the news because all that negativity. And third is I really started on the self-improvement with constantly feeding my mind positivity to help identify those limiting beliefs and replace those with more empowering ones.
That's awesome, man. That's so inspiring. So, you know, I've heard you talk about one of the limiting beliefs you had was, you know, whether or not you could really do real estate, right?
Yeah, there's that one. Have a large amount of experience. You had to have cash, all those different things.
Yeah. And so the way that you broke the ice, so to speak, is you found a really good mentor, right?
Yeah. Well, I found that, but I even had mentors. So this was that mentor you're referring to was one in person, but I actually had mentors before that just from listening to content like Earl Nightingale, the Tony Robbins, the Zig Ziglars. I look at them as mentors and they really helped shape, because when I did get that first deal, I didn't have many of those limiting beliefs I looked at those as opportunities versus saying, okay, those are limiting beliefs. I'm just not going to be able to do it at all.
That's awesome. So you talk a little bit about your mentor. We talk a lot about the power of mentorship and, you know, one of the themes here is how to break into multifamily. We talk about that a lot for people that are in single family or aren't in investing at all. We like to expose the myth that you have to graduate from single family to duplexes, to fourplexes, to small apartments, to bigger apartments. And that's all mindset, you know, and that's all belief in what you can do, whether you believe it, you can do it or not. You're right. You know, right? Love so, it. Yeah. So
that was a golden nugget, you guys. Drop that right there. I wish I had a button that just goes.
You should, man. You should have a button because you drop golden nuggets all the time. So you found a mentor that really opened up all the possibilities for you, or at least some possibility for you that got your foot in the door with investing, got some units under your belt. And you know, maybe talk a little bit about him and what he meant to you.
Yeah, so I would say very impactful. And one thing that really started that relationship was me being of value versus looking at it as a take relationship. So I started working for that individual for completely free. Yes, for those of you on here, completely free. In exchange, I was able to get that mentorship, but I had to put in a lot of work and efforts. And when it came down to the mentorship, I determined what my strengths and weaknesses are and what his strengths and weaknesses are. And essentially, it just ended up pairing together. And that's how I was able to get that first deal was, interesting enough, he was wanting to transition from multifamily or diversify away from multifamily to single family. So he wanted those, but he didn't have the time to be able to do that. Myself, I didn't have the cash and also as much experience to be able to get that deal, but I did have the time to be able to find it. So that was the value exchange that was right there. And so in essence, the very first deal, he funded the purchase price as well as the rehab. And then after that, Sterling, go figure everything else out.
That's awesome. So you said you had the time to go find the deal, but it takes so much more than that, right? Like, you know, for somebody that's dialing in, okay, what's the recipe for this? You went out and found somebody that you could add value to and who had needs that you could meet. You didn't take them to lunch. You didn't offer to, you know, you didn't say, hey, can I pick your brain for an hour? It was like, you know, somebody like you and high level entrepreneurs just don't have time for that. And quite frankly, it's kind of a turnoff, right? Like, you know, it's the way that things work really well in this world is an equal value exchange. So you went to work.
Even more from the other person's end. And I would say with that is I had already had the relationship with that individual about 6 months or so before I approached about working for him. And so this was actually at a CrossFit gym, which myself is, I was bartering to get into the CrossFit gym because CrossFit's pretty expensive. So I was actually cleaning around the gym in exchange for that. And I was actually getting mentorship. And this was one thing I reflected because those owners of that gym had just started that. So I was able to get a lot of behind the scenes of that. And then it just happened to be, there's this quote that says, when the student is ready, the teacher shall arise, that I overheard before he was actually my mentor. And I approached him over her conversations about construction, him having multifamily. And it was about that same time I was transitioning from the construction and I had that pivotal moment that I mentioned earlier. So everything just really converged at once. And then, yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, you know, one of the things that you got to have, I think that you clearly have when you're saying, okay, universe, you know, this, where I am right now isn't exactly where I want to be. And I'm not sure really where I want to be, but I'm willing to take the next steps. And what you had in addition was willingness. You had hustle, right? Mm-hmm. Because you don't go out and find real estate deals without having hustle. And so, you know, anyone listening that, you know, just kind of needs to be directed and managed and that sort of thing probably isn't going to necessarily do real well. But if you've got hustle and drive, and I'm sorry, and what?
And a why? Why are you doing? And why are you doing it? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, absolutely.
So one of mine was, and I remember this was going into my late teens, that I was so broke, Tate, that I had to ask my mom for her food stamp card. Yes, her food stamp card. And I remember going to the checkout line, being so embarrassed to use that. And that was one of the things I do not want to go back to that again. So that's one why, among other things. But if you have that, that'll allow the fuel ultimately to be able to have the drive or the hustle to keep doing and keep going, because there's going to be some tough times.
Yeah. I usually say this, it's kind of towards the end, but since we're talking about it, what's your why now? You know, you've graduated a long time ago from avoiding food stamps, having to do food stamps again. So, you know, now that you're around 500 units or so, you're rocking and rolling with your company, you're rocking and rolling with your education company, that sort of thing. What is it now that drives Sterling White?
I would say just being an ideal for those individuals who came from the environment that I came from. So I don't know what it was, and I don't know if I've always been a good kid, but I don't know exactly how to go into it. I wouldn't say I was a chosen one or anything like that. And I believe that other people have that moment that I mentioned a little bit earlier, but most people, myself, is when I was in that environment, I didn't know there was a way out. So I want to be the ideal and the message that, hey, you don't have to take this path that majority take. You can take this, and this is the blueprint, and this is what I did, and say, and ultimately deliver it to them and be that message for them.
That's powerful, man. So, I mean, essentially you're like a light in the darkness for folks that are trying to find their way and don't really have any direction or anybody showing them the way. Like, you know, I know in your story, you didn't really have the gift of having a male role model in different times of your life, right? Especially early on. So for you to be showing up in such a way, man, this is powerful. I'm almost getting a little emotional. You're showing up in such a way that you're giving back to your people, you know, and your community and people that you don't even know that are listening from all over the world. You're offering mentorship, you know, directly, really. And it's a beautiful thing. And it reminds me of my why as well, which is I like you said, you said it beautifully. You want to be an ideal for people that need an ideal to look up to, at least for a certain period of time in their lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, meaning, hey, I came from that exact neighborhood or very similar neighborhood that you came from, and this is where I am now. You don't have to take. Yeah. So exactly what you're saying.
That's beautiful, Sterling. It really is. Let's talk let's switch gears real quick to, you're kind of known in the apartment world of your direct to seller marketing techniques and finding apartment buildings through going directly to seller. As most listeners know, most deals are found, or a lot of deals are found in this space through brokers. A lot of entrepreneurs that are sitting and looking for deals and are out networking are doing so pretty much exclusively with brokers, hoping that they'll get a pocket listing or a deal that's off market, right? Well, Sterling's figured out a way to find off market deals without any competition on the table, essentially. And that's going directly to an owner who may or may not be thinking of selling, maybe needs a little nudge, or maybe will want to sell a year or two down the line. And I know that you're a master of doing this, and you're a master of follow-up. So maybe just share a little bit about, kind of how you do things, how you approach sellers, and, how you find them even would be a good place to start.
Yeah. And I would say one quote, and this is actually from Grant Cardone, love him or hate him, those of you who are out there, I know it could go either way. But in essence is, even when you are buying, you are still selling. So that it's all sales. And that has really been a huge unlock for me. And so, yeah, it's exactly what you mentioned is all the deals that I acquired. And when I say I, there is a team involved. So had the frustrations of going the broker route and it just wasn't working. The deals were being sent over, wasn't even close to the numbers. So looked at it as a problem to be solved and said, why not go direct to the owner and in essence, beat the broker to the punch to be able to get the deal.
Mm-hmm. And you have really creative ways of kind of breaking the ice with owners and building rapport, and probably taking the edge off the whole sales process, I would think. You want to share a few of those?
Yeah. So one, it's the primary channel is cold call. And I know there's people on here that are like, oh, I don't know about a cold call, calling a complete stranger. But in essence, it just comes down to your why. And so the creative follow-ups that I'll do is what they say in my age group millennials is when you don't hear from someone, you call it being ghosted. So when an owner ghosts me or I just don't hear from them, I will send a small Rubik's Cube that says, especially if I've sent over a letter of intent and we may be a little bit far on price, a Rubik's Cube with a small note that says, hey, let's figure this out.
I love that one.
So yeah. That's one. And also one thing I'll do is when I'm in front of let's say I'm driving past an owner's property, which I feel like all the time when I'm just on the go, when I'm not working, I'm still working, but I will actually pull out my phone just like this in front of the property and do a selfie video and then send it to them. There's that. And then also you can send a small shoe, not a size 10 or a 12, but he would send it to him and it would say, hey, just looking to get my foot in the door.
I love that one. They're all great, but that one's awesome. So yeah. And for the listener, like that is as fun and as funny as that is, in all seriousness, that's like fishing way upstream. That's doing stuff that no one else is willing to do and fishing in a place that really no one else is fishing, right? And doing so in a way that is fun, is going to take the edge off with a lot of sellers. At the very least, you're going to come away with a nice, maybe a referral or just a nice connection that you stay in touch with a few times a year. I love the other one that I love of yours is, I can't even say it. It's sending a birthday card to a prospect, whether or not it's their birthday.
Exactly. Yeah, it may be a little bit soon, or it may be a little bit too soon, or it may be a little bit late. And this was one recent one that a good friend of mine actually did. So hilarious, but he sent out potatoes. Yes, potatoes. And the person on the other end, he actually had a really high, response rate. And one person called him and said, hey, did you send me a potato? He's like, yeah, I sent you a potato. But now that I got you on the phone now, so it's more of those things of just staying top of mind. Because many of the times, one, it's forming a relationship, building a rapport. But just as mentioned, they may not be interested up front. However, anything could happen to where they need the cash for a business. Maybe a relative is not feeling so well. And if you catch them at that right moment and you're the one that's constantly staying in mind, you built that relationship, they'll end up going with you.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, you're such a nice guy and an engaging guy, and you're very authentic. So I'm sure that, you know, you put your hustle and your big why behind those qualities, and you're going to naturally form rapport with sellers. And really, you don't have to be Sterling White. You don't have to be, you know, borderline stand-up comedian, right? To make it in this world, you just have to come from the heart. And people will know when you're being authentic with them, and when you're coming from the heart, when you're being honest with them, versus if you're being a salesperson and being manipulative and pushing and that sort of thing. So I really like that aspect of your approach. And as we've talked about, this is a long game with a lot of these.
Agree. Yes.
These owners. And, you know, one of the things I've heard you talk about in the past is world-class follow-up. And I'm sure that, you know, some of the techniques we just talked about, the, you know, the gifts, the little, you know, just some sort of knickknack to remind them that you're there, that you're there to help them if they need it. And if you're coming from that place of like, how can we help you solve this problem and make it a win for everybody and, you know, get you what you need and all that stuff, man, you can't lose, I don't think, or in the long run.
Yeah, I completely agree. And there was one instance where I was speaking with an owner, and he mentioned that one of his relatives wasn't just feeling so well. So I sent him a condolence, not a condolences card, but just sending
sympathy card. Yeah,
exactly. So it's just one of those things, because I formed the relationship with this individual, and this was 2 years in which we've been in contact. So as you mentioned, it's a more of a long-term play. So I'll constantly be in touch with this individual, and it's not even just about the transaction itself. They live in Chicago, and I mentioned, hey, and this is another sales tactic that I always like to use too, is, hey, I'm actually going to be in your neighborhood in, let's say, in 2 weeks or so. The person agrees, I'm making that trip down there to be able to, because I believe the face-to-face interaction is so much better. And another ninja trick to use is, once you do set up that meeting, is to set up other meetings around that as well, so you get the optimal best use of time.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can do that with, I mean, I know you're sticking pretty much to sellers, but we do that with brokers too. When we're going into a market and doing a site visit or something like that, we'll call as many brokers as we can and set appointments with them, because why not? And if nothing else, it helps you learn the market better, you know, your market, the climate of cap rates and you know, the rate of sales and just how everything's going in that market. And that can be extremely valuable. Plus, you're just building relationships. And, you know, it's such a cliche, but that's really all this is, you know, a lot of relationships and nurturing those and helping a lot of people, you know, solving as many problems as you can.
Value, value, value. And one book that was another game changer for me, and this was on the content marketing side, the digital, but also even outside of that, was Gary V's book, Jab, Jab, Right Hook, that is, the jabs are the value, value, value through free content, helping individuals, and the right hook is invest with me or whatever your service is, that's your right hook. But the main premise of that book was actually just more jabs and not even mention the right hook, because the thing is, through so much value that you put out there, you'll become trusted. What is it? A well-known person in your industry, and people will decide to move forward with you either way. So that's one absolute game changer for me in terms of a book.
Yeah, that's tremendous. I was going to ask you about if you had any books that recently had been influential for you. That's a good one. That's a new one for me. I know Gary Vee very well and watched tons of his videos, but have not read that one. So I'll check that out. So real quick, let's just say, you know, hey, Mr. and Mrs. Owner, Sterling White, you know, I sent you that gift and you called me back and I'm just returning that call. You know, it sounds like you might have some interest in selling. Kind of, where do you take the conversation from there?
Yeah. So from that conversation, it's more so having, in order to make an educated offer, an offer that would make sense to them, would need to receive the rent roll as well as the trailing 12 financials. And then from since that point, then based upon the financials, would want to go do an actual site visit to understand, get a good feel for what type of renovations could be needed. Because most of the assets I, well, formerly did look at did need work. So this was 156 unit that's here in Indianapolis recently closed on. That was close to $2 million in terms of renovations. So shifting, wow. Yeah, so that's big. Quite a bit, yeah. So shifting more from those, but in essence is look to do the site visit. So you have your historical data, and then you take into consideration the value upside. And then from there, I like to offer in between, especially in the market that we're in today, factoring in, okay, this is how it's actually performing. This is the value and the upside on it. And this is the renovations that it's going to cost to be able to get there. And spits out a formula that says, okay, this is the return to the investor partners. And then that's when the offer is then submitted.
And you say you do kind of an in-between offer. So you're looking at existing financials and then maybe in pro forma financials, and you're kind of blending the two and coming somewhere in between there.
Yeah, because most the apartment I'm actually in now, this is 80 units. And with that is the financials were close to about 70% on the expense side. And the owner was actually, wow, most of the CapEx items, they were not putting in the CapEx. They're actually pushing to the operating expenses. So we took into consideration that, well, those expenses are not going to translate to us because majority of them done, meaning most went to the decks and other items. So if we would have offered on that, there's no way we would have closed on the deal because one, it was bought for 3.35 million and easily could have sold on the market for 4 million easily. But if we would have offered on what he's, the actuals that we would have been no way competitive.
Yeah. You'd been too low. And that's just the reality of the multifamily market these days is you're not buying typically based solely on existing financials, but you are buying some upside typically. And then the nice thing about that is there's so many class C minus to C plus or B minus properties that need that value add so badly and need proper management like you did, like what you were doing, going in and taking something that's running 70% expenses. And you know, for listeners out there, it really should be, especially for something that size, you should be around 50% roughly, kind exactly. of a rule of thumb. So you went in and you're doing some upgrading, or did you raise rents much in that project?
Yeah, raised the rents about 70, it was about on average about $60-$65 on a per unit basis, but this needed less in terms of, this was about $300,000 in terms of rehab. And that was by far one of the most favorite projects due to the less heavy lifting and the risk involved with it.
Yeah. So you got the nice blend of a good value add, something that probably cash flowed all right, at least, you know, in its existing form, right?
Oh, phenomenal. Right from the get-go. But it was just one of those that what happened to go direct owner on. But it was about building that relationship, because at the end of the day, this individual was actually speaking with brokers. And I always, when I always like to meet in person, and one of the things I also do from a tactical standpoint, I always bring a thank you card when meeting mm-hmm. with an owner. I believe it's one of those reciprocity things, but I've always been a giving person, and it's all, and the person, it wasn't even about the money for them. They wanted to cash to do some development in Chicago, but they weren't necessarily looking for in terms of the top dollar for their property.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's cool. So you took him a thank you note when you met him originally in person and just handed it to him. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's really cool. That's a great idea. We're pretty big on writing thank you notes after the fact. We got that from Corey Peterson. That's one of his secret sauces, is lots of handwritten notes, and so we do that quite a bit. But I like the handwritten note when you're meeting. You can use that with just about anybody, really.
Yeah, I do it with brokers too. So I still form those relationships. and still have those. And now actually, due to the shift of the market, may not entirely shift to a buyer's market, but I'm actually starting to get calls from brokers. So that's good to still have those relationships with those individuals.
Well, once you're somebody that's shown you can close a deal, then brokers are going to seek you out ideally, right? And that's, I'm sure that's what's been happening with you recently. Mm-hmm. Well, Sterling, there's so much that we could go into. Unfortunately, we're pretty much out of time. Is there anything else, first of all, that you'd like to say about your direct to seller approach? Maybe like a last little nugget. Go for it.
The greatest secret is the follow up. Got to follow up, and that when you're making these points of contact, just to get in contact with the individual, it normally takes 6 to 8 attempts, which many people don't even make the original call itself or even send the direct mail campaign or whatever channel they use. And I was actually speaking with someone the other day and they said direct mail doesn't work. I said, how many times did you hit the current list or did you send to the list? They said once. So that's just a prime example of, you could say, unrealistic expectations, but it takes consistency, persistency in order to make it work through whatever channel you use.
Yeah. And one real quick note on that, you know, with apartment buildings in particular versus single families, you have so many less prospects that you're going to be calling or marketing to or mailing, right? So you can do the personal things. You can spend the $5 on a shoe or a Rubik's Cube and mail it. You can FedEx it overnight even and make it look really important, right? Or you can FedEx an offer.
And have them actually write it. What is that called? Certified mail.
Yeah.
It's where you know someone actually gets it.
Yeah. So you got, you know, you can spend time, resources, effort, money on leads in such a way with multifamily and apartments that you can't really do with single family. It's just a numbers game. So, well, awesome, Sterling. Anything else that you can think of for the listeners as a parting shot, so to speak?
Mindset. Huge. Mindset. I would say having the foundational level on that. During on your awesome podcast that you have, you can share, or I'm just doing an experience here because, again, I'm not perfect by any means, that you can have all the techniques, the tools, the tactics, that if you don't have the right mindset and have that as a foundation, then the rest really doesn't matter as much. And that means listening to Earl Nightingale, who's been huge for me, one of the people that actually pioneered listening while learning. So what people know now is audiobooks. But that really, the self-improvement side, I remember I was going to the library every single day and I listened to his Essence of Success. It was CDs so many times they scratched. But it may sound cliche, you guys, but I'm telling you, mindset is very huge because I even know I still have limiting beliefs to this day. And I'm constantly always looking to learn and determine what those limiting beliefs are and to replace those with more empowering ones.
That's awesome. Well, Mr. Sterling White, once again, thank you so much. You brought huge value today. Lots of truth nuggets and I forget exactly how you say it, but
close enough. That works.
hopefully the listeners had their notepad out because there was some really good stuff in there. And especially some of the scripting that Sterling just went through, some of his direct to seller techniques. And I also just want to once again remind you of just the value of that mentorship, man. That'll take your career on a quantum leap for sure. And working for free, whatever you have to do to get in there. I know I've got opportunities with our company for stuff like that, and probably just about any busy entrepreneur could use you. So, Sterling, once again, thank you so much, and we really appreciate you being here.
For sure. And those of you who are online, Instagram, you can follow me at Sterling White Official. My website is SonderInvestmentGroup.com, but don't ever hesitate to slide into the DM, which is direct message within the questions. Here to be of value at the end of the day.
Yeah. And Sterling's a great follow on Instagram and also on Facebook and also on LinkedIn. Highly recommend that. And you've also got a great educational coaching program going right now, don't you?
Any way to help individuals, because I'm a firm believer that just in essence of just giving back.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Sterling. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next one.
Thanks for listening to The Apartment Guys with Tate Seymour. Tate and friends are grateful to have you as a loyal listener. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe, rate, review, and share with friends on your Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or any other podcast platform. Also, check out Tate's YouTube channel for videos of many of these episodes and more. Until next time, take massive action steps and rock on.